Hello and welcome to the Robot Podcast. I'm Fran Scott, maker, presenter, and all-around engineering fan. In each episode, we'll be finding out how robots are pushing the boundaries of possibility and supporting businesses to make a more sustainable world. From the way we farm our food to how we package it, from 3D printing ocean waste into furniture to transforming cars into pieces of art, robotic technology is absolutely revolutionizing our industries to help them reach an innovative and planet-friendly future. Welcome back to the Robot Podcast. I am absolutely delighted to now be in our third series. Now, in series one and two, we discovered so many ways in which robots are changing our world, from education to construction, food, and beyond. And there's a link in our show notes if you want to find out more about robotics at ABB. In series three, we're going to be doing more of the same, showcasing some cutting-edge technology and, of course, speaking with industry leaders as they turn to robotics and automation to find sustainable solutions that keep the planet in mind. But there are two different definitions of sustainable. Firstly, it can mean to cause little or no damage to the environment, and we'll be exploring that definition later on in the series. But it's the second definition that we're going to be focusing on today. So that's sustainable, meaning to continue over a long period of time. And there is absolutely no doubt that we are all going through changing times. So how does industry learn to adapt to these unpredictable events that influence every corner of the world? Now, one key solution is something that's called reshoring or nearshoring, and we'll hear why industries are bringing production lines closer to home in order to keep businesses sustainable during these unprecedented times. We'll hear from friend of the show, Dr. Sami Atiyah, president of ABB's Robotic and Discrete Automation business area, on how ABB are helping industries transform how they operate. And from Luca Galuzzi, chief sales officer at B&R Industrial Automation, about the industries that are moving closer to home. But first, I spoke with Dr. Mark Cotelier, Managing Director of Supply Chain and Operations at Deloitte Consulting, who kicked things off by taking me through some of the problems industries are facing and why they are turning to reshoring.
Reshoring is about bringing manufacturing, bringing production back closer to the demand source. And so that might be as a result of a firm maybe previously moving production offshore in order to take advantage of labor costs or raw materials costs and then deciding to bring them back. Or it could be a company that has maybe grown up in one of those low-cost locations deciding that it wants to get closer to demand in a particular region or in a particular country.
That localization, that bringing of some of the process closer to where it's needed, has been a trend that we've seen progressing for a while. But more recently, the world has seen some rather unexpected events happen. And so I assume that that's adding into the acceleration of this reshoring as well.
Yeah, I think that's a true statement. When we talk to our clients and when we do the research that we do through Deloitte Insights, we find that about 80% of our clients have experienced some form of supply chain disruption in the last few years. Now, that's easy to see why, right? We've had COVID, we've had some trade tensions, we've had a shipwreck in the Suez Canal that disrupted things for quite a while. Here in the United States, we've had challenges in our ports. So supply chain delay and disruption, partly as a result of increased globalization, has become a fact of life. And as a result of that, about 75% of the clients that we're talking to are interested in reshoring or moving production closer to demand. Because what we're reminded is that supply chain success is not simply a matter of cost. It is also a matter of time and of risk. And I just think that what we're seeing is more attention being paid to the timing and risk elements of that equation, as opposed to simply focusing on cost via some kind of labor arbitrage. When a disruption occurs, things shatter. They are not typically very flexible. They're not typically agile, but they may be low cost. So that's where the risk element comes into play, is if we downplay or fail to understand the risk that we're taking by doing those things, disaster can strike.
So in a nutshell, does that mean that we're seeing all the supply chains move closer to home, to where they're needed?
I don't think we're seeing all supply chains move closer to home. COVID is a great example of this. We see opportunities to move things like healthcare much closer to home. As a result of trade tensions with other countries, we're seeing an increased emphasis on moving high technology closer to home. Certainly here in the U.S., in the last couple of weeks, we've seen something called the CHIPS Act signed, which is an effort by the federal government here in the United States to promote the production of semiconductors in the United States. That I think we can see as a political reaction to trade and other tensions that might exist in different places around the world. So we will not see this happen evenly across different economies, but we will continue to see it happen. I think that is inevitable.
That makes sense. It happening for those items that really need it, but not everything.
Correct. I think then the question becomes, how do we define what need is? Governments will define that one way. Consumers will define that in another. And increasingly, I think we're going to see consumers rule, because we are moving into a world in which I somehow expect that I can order whatever it is I want and it will be delivered, if not this afternoon, at least tomorrow, which increases the demands on producers, which then forces them to figure out how and where do I want to make and stock items, which then flies in the face of this lean urge that we've had over the last many years, as well as, gee, how long does it take to move a container across the ocean and can I get it through the port?
And it's something that affects every aspect of our life, not, you know, not something, let's say, as trivial as getting our Amazon package. But, you know, this affects vaccines, medical equipment, everything.
It really does. And it will continue to. And it affects us in ways that we don't realize, but we are all impacted in our daily lives. Every time something isn't available, anyone building a house or a building certainly knows this. You know, anyone trying to buy a car probably knows this with all the shortages we've seen. So lots of groceries, every dimension of our lives is impacted by the decisions the leaders make in these domains. And I think it bears consideration. And one more stat for you that just happens to come into mind, you know, 65% in our research, 65% of global consumers prefer products that are made in, you know, fill in the name of your country. You know, people want to see this. They want to see things made at home.
With the angle of localization, it cuts out the CO2 emissions that you would have from transport as well. So there's all of this lot. There's that angle that we haven't even spoken about.
Yeah, it certainly could. Understanding carbon footprint requires careful analysis, and that's something that we're also well practiced at. But you make an excellent point. Ships put out a lot of carbon. Air freight puts out a lot of carbon. To the extent that you can minimize that, consolidate it by localizing, you may very well find that you can have a much greener supply chain than you did before.
This all makes total sense in terms of, yes, we're going to need agility and flexibility in these supply chains because of the whole heap of things that can happen, not least climate change, which isn't, you know, of course, going anywhere, and the heat and the floods and all of that lot happening. So yes, you're going to need that flexibility. Now, my question to you, Mark, is would reshoring be possible without robots?
No.
And then we're done.
Yeah. You know, the reason for that, I will go back to, it has a lot to do with labor. and our need as leaders to find ways to augment the capability of humans. We are long, long past the 1970s, where there were concerns about laying people off and hollowing out manufacturing. Everything that we know today is about increasing productive capability around the world as countries realize the strategic importance of maintaining a vibrant manufacturing community. And that means putting the people that work in those environments to maximally succeed. And that means that we need to support them with the robots that move materials to and fro, that meet them at the machine, that allow them to do the work in ways that allow humans to do what they do best while taking off their shoulders the kind of repetitive, boring, dangerous work that robots are so well designed for.
Deloitte have become a bit of an expert in these supply chains, and they've recently published a report on reshoring, haven't they? So what is changing? What trends are you seeing happening in this industry?
There's a shortage of labor around the world. We don't have enough manufacturing personnel. And with inflation and wage increases, labor's continuing to remain expensive in relative terms. However, what is changing is the ways in which we can use technology to mitigate that. The only way it can happen is through the introduction of advanced, flexible manufacturing technologies, things like robots. This is the Robot Podcast. Things like robots and other forms of automation that will allow us to leverage the talent that we have here close to home in order to serve our customers. And I think the last piece of it is, and this is really important and maybe not, at least in my mind, thought about often enough, is it builds resiliency and agility. And what that means is if you're operating a network of localized sources and something happens to one of them, as we know it does, a volcano, a flood, an earthquake, a fire, if you have built agility and flexibility, then you are better able to shift production from one location to another. And in doing that, you maintain the ability to have continuity in your operations. So lots of clients aren't just thinking about, oh, well, I want to move production to the United States, or I want to move production to the UK, or I want to move production wherever. What they're thinking about is, how do I build a digital supply network that allows me to move production to where I need to move it? And the economics of these advanced technologies combined with their flexibility means that that is today a real possibility where it wasn't before.
Thank you to Mark Cotillier there from Deloitte. So there's lots to impact supply chains at the moment, bridging the gap after COVID, manufacturing disruptions in China. But there's also lots of other things to consider too, such as the cost of raw materials worldwide, as well as the disruptions in global supply chains for food, oil, and energy that are happening across the world that can be linked back to the war in Ukraine. So, ABB, being the big thinkers that they are, wanted to dig deeper into all of this. And this summer, they conducted a global survey of more than 1,600 business leaders. And there are some rather startling results. It showed that more than 70% of businesses in Europe and the US plan to re- or nearshore their operations, and that 62% of US businesses plan to invest in robotics and automation in the next 3 years. But in Europe, that figure is even higher at a whopping 75%. So to hear more about this, I caught up with friend of the show, Dr. Sami Atiya, president of ABB's Robotic and Discrete Automation business area, to find out more about the changes that ABB are seeing. And Sami started our chat by telling me about the real-world impact as industries are turning to reshoring.
Well, simply, I mean, Europe and the US are automating faster than ever before. I mean, across the industries, the number of industrial robots sold in North America set a new record in 2021. And I think of it was 28% higher than 2020 and 14% higher than the previous record, which was in 2017. And this growth is expected to continue at a rate of 11.4 annually through 2029. According to IFR and others. And remember, the US is also the birthplace of automation and production line, already one of the global leaders in robotics today. But much of this demand is also from new sectors. So the non-automotive orders now represent 58% of new installations in North America. And in Europe, that figure is even higher. So 75% are non-automotive. So that sector where all started, which is the automotive for robots, moved now to general industry, electronics, food and beverage, logistics, and multiple other areas. So, you know, we're getting demands from areas that we never expected, you know, years ago. And there, you know, a couple of things are important. Obviously, the flexibility, but also the ease of use and the use of IT and AI to support these customers.
Absolutely. And that point you made about it all starting in the automotive industry, of course it did with the Ford Model T. I suppose this is still proving that what starts in the automotive industry spreads to other sectors. And that makes sense. You know, we have to produce a lot of cars. They have that trusted way of doing things that then when they change, they can be those early movers that then others can follow.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, the automotive is also an industry where we all learned, you know, quality. We all learned on time. And in the robotics era, you know, the ones who supply automotive know how to build good products and to innovate, but also to make sure that, you know, your product works 99.99% of all times, which is really great. And now we are, you know, other industries are benefiting from these requirements. But also you mentioned Ford production. I mean, also the evolution, maybe more revolution there, you know, how fixed line production now is changing and being disrupted, because the fixed line production doesn't give you, you know, much flexibility for variances. And now the new way of producing is islands that are connected with AGVs, put robots on the AGVs, and making sure that, you know, your capacity is adjusted to the demand. And if you think, if I'm running a factory, you know, one of my biggest concerns would be that I buy new lines that are empty. And I would rather have scalable production. So with this kind of flexible automation and robotization with AMRs, these are the moving robots, you know, the flexibility of these factories will go up over time, and we will use these technologies from automotive, but also going into logistic, pharma, and food and beverage.
I can imagine it is such a huge decision for a factory to start to implement this reshoring. So how can you help sort of get them into a position to help them relocate their operations or their manufacturing arms?
I mean, from our side, how we support our customers, there are two ways, and both are important. First, we create the right products, the right hardware, the right software to help the customers. And the other side is to help the customer design or redesign their facilities. And both are needed. So on the first point, we are enabling change to more smaller, more affordable, flexible, and importantly, ease of use products, because the more you go into areas where you don't have lots of engineers, I mean, we have requests from bakeries, you know, not smaller ones, but large, you know, bakeries. You can't have, you know, PhD engineers sitting there. They're quite lean and they want it to work, and they don't want to call every 5 minutes a technician to come and support them. So it needs to work, and you need to be able to use it as easy as if you're using your iPad. So this is a major focus for us, this ease of use, more affordable, robots, and then a broad scheme of production cells that are pre-engineered that the customer can take and really apply. And the other one is smaller robots drive productivity and easy to use. And also for smaller companies, now a new generation of stronger and faster collaborative robots. These are the robots that work side by side with humans, and we see big demands from our customers there. And I think we provide a quite good suite for our customers here.
So we've talked a lot in the past on the Robot Podcast about this ease of use and how important it is. And how important do you think it is for the growth of reshoring and nearshoring in terms of getting this automation in use in places that don't traditionally use it?
Yeah, this is a very important question. Now, think you would like to in Europe, you would like to reshore. You want to basically means you have to take a factory and bring it to Europe or bring it to Mexico or so. First thing is obviously you need to design the factory, but the second is you come to the next critical point, which is you need skilled workers. And, you need the skilled workers who can do that specific job. So that's why if you automate the production prior to that, it's easier to move it according to the need and demand that you have. But being able to operate the factory, you need to have them also easy to use. So, it comes all together. If I want to, bring in a factory to a location, I need to have a plant manager and support workers and so on. But I can't afford to have, 10, 15 engineers coming in from Japan or from Germany to help you install and keep the operations running. And they need to be really as easy to use as the iPad or the iPhone. That's why we're working, for example, on our new cobot. You can program by just taking the hand, moving it across the line you want to weld, and basically imitate what a welder is doing. And then the robot just does that again. And that is real ease of use.
That's incredible. And it does sound very just intuitive.
Yes, absolutely.
And so in terms of working with the automation, that's one part, but also designing how it's going to be implemented into your new facility, that's a whole other ballgame. And how do you help customers with that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's an important point. And we've been working on this and quite fortunate that we have, the leading software in this area, which is Robot Studio, where you can basically simulate and design a whole factory line virtually. And you don't have to touch any physical item and nothing. You put your goggles on or your computer in front of you, and you really design the whole factory. And not only design it, in a static way, but you can operate it. You can operate it, you can simulate it. I've sat down with customers where they changed the setup because they didn't like certain, safety aspects and so on. So we did that all virtually. And then at the end, the customer said, okay, now it's done. And then you can take that, and then our teams take it and implement it into the robot world. And then it's just like seamlessly operational. I mean, think of, how much less risk you have, less waste you're producing just by using this virtual design. And this really is the future, is doing more in the digital twin world. Some call it today metaverse. I say we've been doing it for quite some time. That you can simulate, we can collaborate across countries. That's all is possible today with the virtual world.
So in terms of looking to the future, where do you think the future of reshoring and nearshoring is going, and what sort of impact could it have?
Highly automated businesses will have a greater flexibility and resilience to global headwinds and will be able to move production more easily as demand or supply dictates. And being able to automate, not everything, you will not automate 100% because we don't see these, what we call dark factories, that lights off factory that you don't have humans working in. I don't believe in that. I think it will be a hybrid between robots and humans. But the more you automate the more dangerous, dull work, the easier it is actually to move it. So the role of automation and robotics is really enabling the nearshoring and the reshoring of operation, and helping bridge this skill gap. I mean, in 15% of educational institutions in North America currently use robots, and that is a very low number. How do you bring these high-tech topics into the normal field of education and developing, you know, a pipeline of skilled talents is really another topic that needs to be considered hand in hand with that.
It does sound like this reshoring is somewhat coinciding in with this rise of automation. And in a way, this reshoring sort of depends on the automation. Are you excited about where reshoring and the integration of automation into that reshoring, where that can take us?
Yeah, I personally believe, and I did my PhD in robotics quite some years ago. And I'm absolutely sure that the next 10, 15 years in robotics are much more exciting than the last years. And also, you know, last but not least, you know, sustainability. You know, at the end of this century, we will have more than 8 billion people living on this planet. And the number is not going down. Many of these people on this planet don't have the level of income and availability of food and shelter that we have in the Western world. So we need to do a better job in doing more with less. And I could not figure anything better than you know, automating and being more productive and more efficient with our resources on this planet.
Thank you so much, Sami Atiya. Now, in 2017, a company called BNR joined the ABB Group, and they're pros when it comes to developing scalable hardware and software solutions. They're the global center for machine and factory automation and supply manufacturing industries that make finished goods all around the world. For them, it's all about working together seamlessly to give their customers that technological edge in whatever market they may be in. So, which industries are turning to reshoring, and how do BNR help the companies make that jump? This was something our producer, Izzy Clark, asked Luca Galluzzi, Chief Sales Officer of BNR.
In a nutshell, we present a project that they clearly see that will lower the operating cost that maybe in Europe and in US would make finished products too expensive out of the market, making machines and production facilities more and more self-sufficient, intuitive, easy to be managed, and not least easy to maintain by personnel who are not necessarily qualified ones.
What are some of the success stories that you've seen from your customers?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, for confidentiality reason, I'm not allowed to give names and details.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Yeah, but I can say that we have clearly seen two sectors in particular that are benefiting from this trend. One is the textile industry, such as spinning machines, and the other one is the semiconductor industry, like photolithographic machines or cutting machines. In the first case that I was mentioning...
This is the textile industry that we're talking about
here. Yes. This is the textile one. A large Indian and other European machine manufacturer have been benefited from a large reshoring effect from China in this case. The former two countries such as India itself, but also Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. And the second big customer that is located in Europe has found, let me say, new and great life in countries such as Turkey, but also Mexico, and also in historical markets that have long been unaffected by major changes such as Germany. Both companies in less than 2 years have more than doubled the volumes of businesses with us. Considering also machine manufacturing in the semiconductor industry, I recall a very important customer in Europe that is having an impressive growth because of increased global demand in semiconductors, but also because of a huge, huge investment in nearshoring by countries like the USA. And here I'm talking about the famous CHIPS Act.
Yeah, and so this series is about sustainability as well. So have companies seen benefits in relocating that are helpful for the planet overall?
Well, it's a very, very good question. First of all, really are countless. They had a confirmation that to make an economically sustainable product, it is no longer necessary to migrate to areas of the world where the cost of personnel is lower, because this parameter is not longer impactful due to the high level of automation and its flexibility. However, they appreciated all the logistic, operational, and know-how also protection advantages that are coming from the proximity to the other key departments that make the company so successful, like the R&D, but not to forget also the proximity to the end customer. And it's, I mentioned it, economically sustainable, but as you also asked, another determining factor is to also be ecologically sustainable, making such companies greener and more respectful of the world we live in.
How are they actually more sustainable than ecologically, I suppose, then?
Yeah. The technological maturity achieved by our automation solution makes processes more efficient and less energy consuming. Waste is also reduced to a bare minimum, but above all, investment in CapEx are significantly longer in time. And why so? Simply because the machines and the systems, thanks again to flexible automation, can adapt and respond to the needs of a very dynamic market, meeting new customer tastes and needs that are increasingly individualized and custom designed. So a great win-win situation for us, for our customer who can offer great value proposition, and to the end user who benefit them. So all in all, in a very sustainable manner.
What's interesting about reshoring is it's this bringing back closer to home of certain processes within certain industries, and how that not only enables continuous operation and the cutting down of supply chain problems, but actually it could lean to sustainability in terms of the first definition that we covered, in terms of being kinder to the environment. So there is so much going for re and nearshoring, and I can see why it's becoming the trend. That is it for this week. A massive thank you to Mark Cotelier, Sami Atiya, and Luca Galuzzi. In our next episodes, we'll explore that other side of the sustainable coin. So in terms of being kinder to the environment, we'll look at the worlds of art and food and beyond. We'll look at how robotics and automation is helping industries adapt to find more planet-friendly solutions. I'm Fran Scott, and the Robot Podcast is a Fresh Air production for ABB. If you want to find out more about robotics at ABB, there's a link in the show notes. And remember to follow or subscribe now for free wherever you get your podcasts, so you never miss an episode.
Part of the ABB Decoded series.